So you ready to talk about Israel and Palestine?
No.
Okay. Are you ready to talk about pornography?
Yes.
Okay. That seems fair. That seems within the scope of our... It's in our wheelhouse.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the complicated situation in Israel and Palestine to speak it with any authority to it. But I know enough about Eagles ripoffs and Euro horror to talk about the film Mania.
Oh, yeah. I guess we can talk about that. What else can we talk about?
Well, we can talk about how it's the fifth week of Fright.
It is the fifth week of Fright, and... All through the house, dread did lurk. And here you are again with us, some jerks.
we're workshopping that.
It's a poem. It's a whole poem. It's a whole poem.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a tone poem, but it just, it's more sensory. You feel the wetness and the tightness of it as you hear the words recited to you. I slap my lips and gulp. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah, that's it. Third take, that's a charm. And you're all charmed by me, Jeremy, and not so much Boss.
No, I'm far less charming.
Yeah, look at him. He's sweating through his disgusting gray t-shirt. He's a filthy pig, but, you know, he's my buddy, and I love him, and that's why we started the Raincoat Report, the show you're listening to now.
Yes. So, today, as has been tradition when we cover 5 weeks of Fright, we're doing a horror double feature.
Yeah, a little... We've been up all night in the... We've been down in the lab. We've been down in the lab all night.
Yeah, working on our monster.
Yeah, my eyes have... seen the listen to that song so many times to not know the words when I need to recall them. Whatever happened to the Transylvania Twist?
I don't know. It went out with Frankenstein and Chubby Checker.
Yeah, Chubby Checker only died a couple of years ago. That was crazy to me. Yeah, isn't that something? He seems like. I think sometimes we have an idea of the past just being so far away that everyone from it is dead.
Yeah.
My friend was recently very confused that Al Green was still alive and kicking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, no, he's certainly dead. And I was like, no, he's alive and he's performing in Chicago next week.
Well, we did have a recent loss that hits close to home.
We did. And it explains why I got here so late. I've been... sitting Shiva for dear friend of the podcast, Herschel Savage.
Yes, he died earlier this month, unfortunately.
Yes, I got there late. But all the same, we pay our respects by not showing any films featuring him for the next several weeks. He died in the middle of, you know, we'd already planned out our programming schedule, and there was no time to change it.
Yeah, well.
And you know what? I think he would respect that.
Yeah.
I think he would have to accept it, as we've seen him play many a powerful cuck.
Yes.
You know, he would be resigned.
Yeah, he knows that sometimes you have to sit by the sidelines and just watch it all unfold.
Yeah, whether you like it or not. And dear viewer, that's what we have in store for you this week. What are we covering?
This week we are covering two films, of course, as a double feature. The first one that we're going to discuss is a film called Mania from 1971. Or, if you go by the Internet Adult Film Database, it's also titled School for Dead Girls.
I like that title better.
Yeah, it's more fitting. This dates it to 1973. So, I don't know when it came out, but there are some interesting things about this film.
This film has a very little going for it and a lot going for it at the same time.
Well, in a way, it's sort of high concept in the sense that it is a spiritual remake of the 1969 film The House That Screamed.
Oh, is it? That's not one that I've seen.
So that is also originally titled La Residencia.
That's not a scary title.
It is a film directed by Narciso Ibanez Serrador.
Okay.
Who I know mostly from another film that he made, Who Could Kill a Child, which is one of my favorite killer kid movies.
I still need to see that one.
You should. It's excellent.
Do you learn who could kill a child? It's not like Who Killed Captain Alex, or you'd never quite find out.
No, you learn who could kill a child.
Okay.
And it's quite fucked up. The House That Screamed is one that I have purchased and is part of my library, but I haven't actually watched.
That's fair. You've got an extensive library of films.
But I know what happens in it now that I've seen this film, more or less.
More or less.
But yeah, I thought that was an interesting tidbit. There was another film that was part of this collection, this coming from Vinegar Syndrome's All Night at the Bizarre Art Theater box set.
Mm-hmm.
I had considered us covering another film in the set, which has ties to a European horror film, but I decided not to, and to give that to another day where I could do my homework a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll give you.
But finding out about this happened at the 11th hour. Otherwise, I could have done my homework here too. But that's okay.
That's fine. No one needs to really do too much homework. We're not in school anymore.
Yeah, school's out.
School's
forever.
Out. Yeah, they blew it up.
Yeah.
That's at the end of that song. They blew up that school. That was real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have an explosion. I've been wanting to hit a bunch of buttons over here, and I realize my library is really slim.
It is.
Maybe you can get me, it's like a hint for Christmas, you know?
For Christmas, I can get you more buttons.
Yeah.
We'll work on that. We still got a couple months. I might be able to make that happen.
Yeah, Santa's elves are always busy.
Yes, hard at work.
Making little buttons.
Santa's elves' hands are the devil's plaything. Anyhow, this film has a cast of people that you would generally not recognize,
mm-hmm.
And that's about all I can say about it.
Yeah, a group of unknowns.
Yes, the director's unknown.
What if it was that Spanish guy just doing this for the porn market?
Oh, Serrador decided to make the American remake, but the producers just turned it into a porno by the time they were done?
Yeah.
I love it.
I think that, you know, it could have happened.
It's probably what happened. So, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about Mania.
Okay. And we'll introduce our second feature afterwards?
Yes.
Excellent.
Let's not confuse the listening audience.
Yeah.
By throwing too much out at the same time.
Yeah, that's apt to happen when we speak on matters.
Yes.
Most profound.
So, screw it. Are we going to take a break or no? Let's just do it.
Yeah, let's just do it. We'll just split this one right in half. It'll,
yes,
like
in
a,
twain.
Yeah, we'll split it in twain. We'll take a big saw. And we'll saw it right in half at the middle mark.
Yes. And we'll have to choose which half we want at the end.
Yeah. No.
Each of us takes a half.
Oh, home?
Yes.
Okay. I want the legs.
Okay.
I like when an episode has good legs.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
So we open with a group of girls surrounding a table. Being told by an authority figure here, which we are later introduced to as Mrs. Wellington, the headmistress of the school.
Yeah, the school's for dead girls.
Yes. She's telling them that they should be thankful that they're at this reform school now, and added that if their parents weren't so wealthy, they wouldn't be able to be here. She asks where Oko is. And no one seems to know. But we zoom in into the eyes of one of the girls at the table, and we fade into a sex scene between her and Oko,
yes,
the young Asian lady.
Mm-hmm.
They start the scene in lingerie and quickly begin to undress one another and kiss all over each other's bodies. After a few moments, we cut back to the girls surrounding the table, and Mrs. Wellington calls out to Oko to join them for dinner. We cut to Oko making out with yet another young woman, and at this point is when we begin to notice the music in this film.
Yeah.
Particularly this jammy organ solo from Eagles' Witchy Woman.
Yes.
But, so I started to do my research here, and I don't know what version of Witchy Woman this is, because it is not the original.
No, it is not. I would say, and I'm not confident on, like, which group did it, but there was quite an industry of pretty much, like, just Muzak groups that would re-record, like, easy listening type covers of popular hits and stuff.
Sure.
Sometimes they'd be partly or all instrumental. Sometimes, like in this one, they would mostly just include the chorus.
Right.
It's pretty jamming. There's a song in the scene before this that I don't recognize, but it's like a soul song or something with lyrics.
So I looked it up, and I will tell you here in a moment when I find it in my notes, because I did my research.
Daring the process. I understand. Yes. Okay.
This is a film where during the sex scenes, it's not very dynamic.
Yeah.
And I had some time to do research whilst also watching.
They have a very specific way of shooting all the sex.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, it's I pulled it up on Spotify and was like, no, this isn't the Eagles version. And then I looked at all the versions I could find, and it didn't match up with this. So, but anyway, yeah, it's very organ heavy, it which is cool.
Yeah, it's nice. But it's no... Stay
Well, yeah, this wasn't the jam hit of the summer.
No, not yet. This was 1971 or perhaps 1973.
I believe that I looked and Witchy Woman came out in 72, which gives more credence to the 73 date.
Maybe it was an early demo for Witchy Woman that one of the damn Eagles leaked them.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, they were partying with Glenn Frey. And Joe Walsh.
So they kiss and caress one another's bodies, lots of tongues fluttering against nipples. We cut back to Mrs. Wellington yelling out to Oko again, and then we see more footage of the scene with Oko and the young black woman that we saw at first, now with some cunnilingus. This is where I did my research, and the song here is Ebony Woman by Billy Paul from 1970.
Okay, that's not a... That must have been a hit then that didn't really make it down to us, so we get on the old-timey radio stations.
Yeah. There's not... I mean, I don't feel like the radio stations here have a ton of soul-type music, really, anyway.
You'll get some on, wacky sometimes.
Yeah.
But not often enough. Not often enough to get... Ian Chris. Egyptian Woman.
Billy Paul, Ebony Woman.
Excellent.
So, at the table, they finally give up on waiting for Oko and sit down to pray and eat dinner. Mrs. Wellington goes around the room talking down to and scolding all of the girls as they prepare to eat.
Yes, the one on the furthest right, like at the far end of the table, she has perhaps the biggest beehive hairdo I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It is absurd. It makes this film feel more like it's from like the like late 50s or early 60s suddenly.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's a mix of styles. This film is timeless.
So then we cut to a car driving down the street and a man telling Susanna that after she gets out of this school, she'll show your mother and I respect, as he says it. He adds that Mrs. Wellington is a harsh disciplinarian. So we see the car parking and a man leading a young lady in. Mrs. Wellington greets them, telling Susan, as she calls her, to take her cases to the waiting room as she talks to her father. So we cut to Susan's dad.
Susan, well, you know, whichever.
Well.
Take your pick.
And he's talking to Mrs. Wellington about how his daughter is out of control. She asks how old Suzanne is. So she got Susanna, Susan, and Suzanne within a minute or two in this film.
They only had so much film.
So she's apparently 17, and he adds that he can pay her in advance. Mrs. Wellington says that they have a small school there, and adding another girl wouldn't allow her to take care of all the girls as well as she needs to. But Susan, Susanna, Suzanne's dad offers $15,000, and suddenly Mrs. Wellington thinks she can make it work.
That hussy.
So Mrs. Wellington thanks him for coming and assures him that they'll take care of Suzanne. We see Mrs. Wellington send Suzanne.
Several of my notes at this point are just Susan, Suzanne, Susanna, just back and forth.
She sends her to her new room as a creepy guy is peering at Suzanne through the window.
Does he have a beard?
Yes. Or he's definitely got a mustache.
I feel like he had a beard, but I wrote Charlie Manson in the notes, so maybe that biased me. Because none of the later males have beards.
Yeah.
They're both clean cut. Well, except for their mustaches.
So then another creepy but different man walks into Mrs. Wellington's room, and he sits down on the fartiest sounding leather couch I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was creaking and farting all over the place.
Mrs. Wellington confronts this man, her son Peter. She confronts her with a piece of lingerie she found in his room. She tells him that the girls here are no good for him.
Yeah, they're bad for him.
These bad girls don't love him like she does.
Yeah.
She sits next to him on the leather couch and unzips his pants to produce his cock, which she briefly strokes before beginning to suck it. Mrs. Wellington sucks his cock for a bit, and he thrusts into her mouth and throws his head back in delight.
They have a unique relationship.
They sure do. She continues to suck his cock and lick his tip for a while as an organ solo from Witchy Woman plays.
We kind of talked over it earlier, but during the dinner scene...
Uh-huh.
There's an instrumental version of California Dreamin'.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Yeah,
it just goes, nah, 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 leaves are brown. It doesn't say it. But,
right.
You know, there's also whatever song, it's just called Where is the Love, I think.
Okay.
So like it's like an R&B song. There's an instrumental version of that that plays through a lot of these scenes too. Usually when it's not Witchy Woman, it's that other song.
Gotcha.
I watched it with Sally, so I had a let's say a soul music expert in the room.
Excellent. So after a bit, he strokes and blasts on Mrs. Wellington's lips and tongue. She strokes and licks it a bit more as he leans back and grimaces. A more sax-focused song kicks in that I couldn't place as she licks cum off the sides of his cock.
I think that might be the song.
Gotcha. Eventually, Mrs. Wellington pulls down his jeans more and straddles his lap. I suppose, theoretically, to ride his cock and sitting cowgirl, but at least at first, I think she's just grinding against his flaccid cock.
Mm-hmm.
We get a close-up that basically is just her mashing his balls with her butt.
Get a close-up on the cunt. It's beautiful.
But we do eventually see her riding his cock in some more close-up penetration shots.
Get a close-up on the cunt. It's beautiful.
That's the trick in this film.
Yes. Eventually, the shot blurs out on Peter's face, and we blur into Peter having sex with the young black lady we saw with Oko earlier. He's fucking her missionary on a bed, and we get some close-up penetration shots. We get some shots of him humping her and tweaking her nipples. Eventually, she climbs on top of Peter and rides him cowgirl for a bit. The sax music gets saxier as this goes along. Peter's fucking the young lady from below for a bit. Then she goes back to doing most of the work. After a few minutes, Peter pulls out, coming on her ass before pushing his cock back inside her and caressing her more. We see them cuddling in bed afterwards. Peter reaches over and hands her a sheer nightgown from the nightstand and sends her out of the room. As haunting organ music kicks in, we zoom into Peter's face. We see his sexual partner here wandering the dark hallways and opening a door, only to have a hand reach in from behind her and grab her face. We then cut to the yet unnamed creepy guy we saw earlier. He's like the groundskeeper or something.
Yes.
And he's outside carrying a screen for a window as we see Mrs. Wellington looking down at him from a window above. We cut to Mrs. Wellington on the phone talking to someone, telling them that unfortunately Kathy, who was Peter's sex partner there that has gotten grabbed.
Oh, was that the black woman?
Yes.
Okay.
Which was unnamed until she was dispatched of.
Yeah. Well, you know.
She's telling somebody on the other end that Kathy went missing last night and that she's sure the authorities will have her within a day or two. With this being a reform school, I guess the idea is that she ran away.
Yeah, you don't want to stay in those places. They're full of fucking maniacs.
Clearly. After she hangs up the phone, we cut to Peter in bed. He's reading and gets approached by Oko. He calls her over to the bed and immediately pulls her clothes off and she climbs into bed. Apparently, she may be one of those witchy womans, as witchy woman again plays as they make out.
Mm-hmm.
Peter caressing Oko's body.
Maybe they thought this song was scary and was heightening the tension.
Perhaps. It is kind of scary.
It's haunting. Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh.
We watch as Peter goes down on Oko for a bit. She rubs his head as he goes to town on her for a while. After a few minutes, Oko begins to suck Peter's cock. This ultimately transitions into them 69ing. After a while, we see Peter erupt with a load as Oko continues to lick and suck his cock. Oko lays out on the bed as Peter gets up and steps away. Oko then stands up, puts her sheer nightgown on, and then turns around and immediately is confronted with a man in a knife who then slashes her.
I need a psycho, noise effect for that kind of stuff. All I've got's my hammer. And when all you got's a hammer, every problem is a nail.
That's true.
Yeah.
We then see the creepy groundskeeper throwing away a large trash bag as, again, Mrs. Wellington is staring at him from a window. She face palms and shakes her head as she steps away from the window. We cut to Peter with another young lady.
What happened to Suzanne or Susan?
I don't know.
I guess she's just milling about the school for dead girls waiting to be murdered.
Yes.
Okay.
More or less.
I like that she was maybe the second or third kind of named character and has just vanished completely.
Yes.
This is a movie that's about an hour long. So at this point, she's been gone for about 15 minutes since she's been introduced.
Yeah. So yeah, we cut to Peter with another young lady fucking her breasts on a bathroom floor on a pile of towels, and we hear some more saxophone music.
It's nice. I like a little, a little tit fucking. You don't see it too much. It's good to see sometimes.
He continues to titty fuck her here for a bit before he strokes and blows a load all over the young lady's chest. He kisses her and seems to lick up a little bit of his load. The lady sits up and Peter pulls out some flowers wrapped in plastic. He hands them to her, noting that they were the sweetest flowers he could find for the sweetest flower he knows. She seems happy with the present and Peter walks away.
Yeah. I think the camera in this one, when they're fucking, it does a zoom in and out thing that focuses on their faces.
Yeah.
I didn't care for it. Just to rewind a moment, I have some complaints about Peter's pussy eating technique.
Okay.
He is all over the goddamn court. He cannot find the clit to save his life. He is just slapping his tongues side to side on anyone's labia that he can and just kind of licking the legs and And I'm seeing it really well because it's so close up.
Right.
And it goes on for so long, but it's just, it's sloppy. It's bad. Peter, not a pussy eater. You know, I'm going to give him Bonk of the Week, actually.
There we go.
There we go.
After a moment, we get a shot of this lady from behind as we see some hands reach in and put a bag over her head and suffocate her for several seconds before her head falls to the side. We see blood coming out of her mouth.
That's cool. I wonder if that's in the house that screamed.
I don't know. It seems like something that would be.
I know it's also in Black Christmas, which came out after this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I would assume the director of Black Christmas, also the director of A Christmas Story.
Yes, Bob Clark.
Bob Clark probably saw The House That Screamed and not Mania. But it's tough to say.
Who knows?
You don't necessarily have to be, I guess, inspired directly by a film, but it's a fairly unique way to kill someone on screen, so I figure there must be an inspiration somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe he saw it. Maybe Bob Clark saw that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he was Mania.
At the end of the day, we were all Mania.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm in a mania right now.
So we cut to the groundskeeper outside, this time arranging some rocks and landscaping as, again, Mrs. Wellington is staring at him from her window. We then cut to Mrs. Wellington giving Susan's ass some good wax with her hand. Mrs. Wellington tells Suzanne not to see her son again. She softens her voice and tells Suzanne she doesn't want to hurt her. She begins to caress her ass and then starts to play with her labia and clit with her fingers.
Had she been with her son?
We hadn't seen it.
But he's been, you know, just kind of laying pipe all over the house, so it's tough to tell.
It makes sense that she would have, but the film has decided not to show us because I guess she wasn't murdered.
Show, tell, don't show.
Yes. Yeah. That's the rule of film.
The classic rule of storytelling in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell, don't show.
Yes.
Mrs. Wellington lets her fingers explore Suzanne's vagina for a bit with a big close-up for the audience to see her hole is spread wide open. After a couple minutes of this, Suzanne gets on her knees.
Get a close-up on the cunt. It's beautiful.
Suzanne gets on her knees and begins to go down on Mrs. Wellington as we get close-ups of Mrs. Wellington getting tongued and her facial reactions. At one point, Suzanne seems to start laughing as she's going down on Mrs. Wellington. This scene continues for a bit longer than that, and we see Mrs. Wellington moaning and enjoying herself. She tells Susie, the third or the fourth goddamn name that she's been given.
Well, they've just
to go fucked. Back to her room.
Oh, well, they just fucked. So Susie's like a, you know, kind of like a nickname for any of those. So at this point, you know, it's very informal.
I guess so. After she leaves, Mrs. Wellington cries, asking herself what she's done.
Yeah, she's a pervert. She's going to jail.
The creepy groundskeeper grabs Suzanne and puts his hand over her mouth, dragging her away. Mrs. Wellington hears a scream outside and walks off to investigate. We see Suzanne's captor outside telling her to run. Run from this evil place. Suzanne indeed takes off running. We then see Mrs. Wellington walk into a bedroom and lift a cover to see something that makes her cry out. A gloved hand reaches in. It's Peter, who tells her, "Mother, isn't she beautiful? She's perfect, just like you always wanted for me."
He did a pieces.
Peter explains she's made of Oko's hair and face, Sandy's beautiful body, and Kathy's arms and legs and breasts. Isn't she perfect? We see Mrs. Wellington screaming, though we don't hear the sound. Peter says there's just one more thing he needs. Your heart, Mother. He raises his knife and Mrs. Wellington screams. We see the shadow of the hand and knife and get a title card that reads, "The End."
Yeah, like it just flashes in like mid-knife plunge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yes, he did a pieces.
Yeah. He made a lady. Out all those dead girls.
Yes, yeah, so as Juan Piquer Simon did Later on, I think that was like 80 or 81.
Yeah, I think that was a little bit later.
You know, maybe he took inspiration from this.
Yeah, or at least from, I assume the house that Scream has a corpse.
Probably.
As a corpse lady.
I think I hit the Wikipedia page and confirmed that much. So.
Excellent.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
But, you know, calling it a pieces is much better than calling it a house that screamed.
Yes. Of course, here we don't actually see the results, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately, this film really, I would have liked something, you know, even like a lady who is just like in bad Frankenstein makeup or something.
Yeah,
that would have been fine.
A Frankenhooker.
Yeah, a Frankenhooker, if you will. You know, something along those lines.
But yeah, this is quite a film.
Yeah, it's a wild one. You just want to go ahead and do our usual shtick for it, or should we save that for later on?
Let's just go ahead and do it while we're thinking about
it. The Raincoat Review.
This is a film that's great in concept and pretty middling in its execution, ultimately.
Yeah.
I feel like I had a lot more fun talking about it with you than watching it.
That's fair.
It is the stuff, the kills and stuff that happen are infrequent.
Yeah.
But at least one of them is pretty wild with the shower curtain.
Yeah.
They did some stuff, even though it kind of looked like she was laughing through part of it. there was some neat, there's a nice little bones of a story here, obviously plucked from a Spanish film, apparently.
Yeah.
Some points for creativity, I guess, for just like ripping that off and just putting a bunch of tits in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not really even so much tits, more.
Get a close-up on the cunt. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I was watching this on like a fairly large screen television, and at times, like the bodies merging together kind of had like a Lovecraftian god type image, like of just like pulsating like vaginal lips and floppy balls and like one big butthole eye. It's strangely magnetic, but also very, very boring. It opened up a gate, I think. for better or worse. I do love the copious amount of eagles.
Yes.
That's pretty tight. That was a delight. A fun little Euro horror style shocker that's often more boring than rewarding, but kind of thrives on the twist ending that we ruined for you.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I'd give this one maybe like a 2.5 ultimately.
Okay.
There's some good stuff to it, but I probably won't go back to the well again unless I maybe just have it on in the background while I'm doing something weird.
Like doing a pieces?
Yeah, just making my own pieces. I'm just watching all the different types of pieces movies to get inspired.
Yeah.
Yeah, this stuff's it's not good for you.
Yeah, it depends on what kind of scale you're judging it on, but on a normal scale, yeah, this is probably like a 2.5.
Right.
I would say that I went into it with very low expectations. Mm-hmm. These, like, hour-long, early 70s porn films, a lot of them are pretty rough.
Yeah.
And usually the sex scenes aren't shot very well, and
I think that's
they
the
go
case
on
here,
for too long. And yeah, those things are at play here, like in all those films. But I liked I liked the horror aspects of it.
Yeah, no.
It definitely was infrequent, like you said. Of course, I love the stolen music. Always love that. Mm-hmm. There were enough things in the dialogue that made me chuckle a little bit.
I like
for fun.
I like the incest kind of melodrama angle of the headmistress. She's like maybe the only complex character here.
Yeah.
She has a total breakdown after she fucks one of her kids, but it's okay because she doesn't live very long after that.
Yes, she gets what's coming to her.
And Peter gets what's coming to him. The pieces.
I was delighted watching it because I had very low expectations. You know, if you were going to watch one of these, like, cheapy hour-long...
You could definitely do a lot worse.
Yes.
You could watch Succula.
Yes, this is definitely better than Succula. This is better than a lot of them we've covered.
I'd say, like, just... even in the same set, I think this is probably more entertaining than The Geek.
Yes, although The Geek is...
The weirdness factor is higher there just because of the nature of it, but...
Yeah.
This is definitely more fun to watch than that, I would say, given that it's not just 45 minutes of people fucking and hiking.
Right. And you know, to be fair, as I mentioned, I did research on, like, what songs were playing while the sex scenes were going on, because they went on for a while and were not very dynamic.
No, and as I demonstrated, you shouldn't watch them directly, because entities will start to come through.
Yes, if you stare into the buttholes long enough, they'll open up and swallow you whole.
It's like, have you seen From Beyond?
Yes.
Those little eels started coming out through the butthole.
Yes.
So, stay tuned for more Lovecraftian madness. first segment adjourned.
All right, we'll be back to talk about... Oh,
wait, give it a number.
Oh,
you did?
I did at the beginning, 2.5.
All right,
delete
it.
Yes, we'll be back in a moment to talk about The Waltz of the Bat. Oh, yeah? Great.
I just finished interviewing one of the natives from today's film.
Oh, boy.
I hope that was enlightening for you all.
So, next we're going to talk about Waltz of the Bat, directed by Steve Brown. It has a cast of not well-known characters here, but one thing that I did notice as I was kind of looking at the filmographies of the people in this film, several of them were in Confessions of a Teenage Peanut Butter Freak.
That makes sense. This is that kind of humor.
Yeah. This film is interesting. It's part Dracula film, part pimp film, part superhero parody.
Yeah, it's something. It's got something for the whole family.
Yeah. So, I guess without any further ado, let's just talk about it.
Let's dance it out.
Yeah, let's dance with the bat.
Yes. You ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? I am the Joker. I'm done with that one. You can hear my Joker laugh?
Yeah.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Oh, here it is. You like that one? That's a Joker.
Sounds like more of a penguin laugh.
They're the same guy, right?
More or less.
Okay.
So we open with credits set to some orchestral music. And then see a man in a suit and a top hat making his way down the steps. He looks kind of like Coffin Joe.
He looks like Dracula the Dirty Old Man.
Yeah. He runs down the streets flapping his cape before spotting a woman across the street. He looks down at a $50 bill and approaches her, handing her the cash. our creepy count, leads the woman back to his shitty apartment. He invites her to sit down and introduces himself as Count Eric de Fledermouse.
It's a flying mouse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the woman introduces herself as Rosie. The Count offers her some wine, which she declines at first, citing that she's in a hurry, but he insists. After the Count leaves the room, Rosie looks at the camera, confessing to the audience that she always attracts weirdos, and this guy takes the cake. She adds that she hopes that this doesn't get too weird while they're fucking. The Count returns with a couple of glasses and a bottle of wine, pouring them drinks. Count Eric toasts, and Rosie notes that she doesn't like the wine. It's bitter. The Count replies that sweets make him sick. The Count leads Rosie into a bedroom, and she asks if she should get undressed. The Count says, of course, and Rosie begins to undress, laying back on the bed when she's done. The Count then approaches the bed and begins to go down on Rosie to little or no reaction. He then cackles with laughter. Foolish girl, you think I'm just another sickie? I'm the great ball master, the bat!
Yes. And he reveals he's wearing nothing under his cape.
Yes. he throws his cape back to reveal his nudity before leaning in to go down on Rosie more, soon tossing away his cape completely and going down on Rosie. This continues for a bit and includes some fingering before Rosie begins to lick and suck the bat's cock. Oh, you little bitch, he says, you're going to make a lot of money for me. Rosie soon bends over, and the bat begins to fuck her doggy style. After a minute, the bat mounts her missionary. We get some shots of the penetration, and the camera pans up to their facial reactions. Eventually, the bat pulls out and comes on Rosie's stomach. We then cut to the bat in his cape and nothing else, sitting in a chair, telling the audience that he's been making his living this way for 100 years, and he lives well.
Yes.
He says that in 1881, he was at a grand ball in Vienna. He waltzed all evening with the princess, the bee.
Oh, Princess Bee.
We then cut to the bee, a woman in a bee costume eating a banana. She introduces herself as the bee, noting that she's in all the bee movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like Jerry Seinfeld's bee movie.
Your joke was good. Hers was bad. I'm going to give you a real laugh. Hold on.
There we go. So we cut back to the bat. He says that it was a magical night. Now he's 140 years old and doesn't look a day over 40, and he can fuck for hours. He explains that after he fucks a woman, he owns them, and they'll do anything he tells them to, and he uses this to his advantage monetarily. We then see the bat talking to Rosie. He gives her 3 addresses and tells her she should do anything that the people at the first 2 addresses tell her to do. She should then get $50 from each of them and bring it back to him at the 3rd address listed.
Yes.
We cut back to the bee, explaining that she gave him that power in Vienna, and now he's misusing these powers.
Yeah, she's gotta get it back.
The bat says that his power is almost limitless. Someone off camera asks, "What about the bee?" And the bat cowers, screaming, "The bee? Who said that?" He calls her a honey-dripping wench. He says that she has to fuck him by midnight or else she'll never be able to stop him. So we cut back to the bee, who is indeed drizzling honey on something and eating it. The bee explains that she's been after the bat for 100 years, and she has to get him tonight or she'll turn to dust. It's as simple as that.
That is pretty simple.
We cut to Rosie in a woman's house where we see a bozo blow-up punching bag thing with panties draped over the face like a mask.
Wouldn't it only be 90 years?
What do you mean? Oh, yeah.
Oh. Maybe this movie's set in 1981.
It must be, yes.
Okay. It's like...
So, yeah, the other woman here says that she doesn't know where he is, laughing about the panties on the blow-up toy, which she pulls off, noting that he's a child. She asks if this is Rosie's first job for the Bat, and Rosie acknowledges this. The other woman notes that the Bat sends them a girl every month. Around this time, a red stuffed snake's head peers up from behind the couch, and the man of the house, in a safari hat and some panties, joins the ladies on the couch with his 6-foot stuffed animal snake. He introduces himself as Leo the Lion. He's wearing the woman's panties, which she asks him to take off. He refuses and she argues with him. He notes that he's naked and he hasn't even been introduced to their guests. Rosie introduces herself, adding that the Bat sent her. Leo says the Bat is neat and asks to try on Rosie's cape. Leo says Rosie's pretty and begins to make out with her as the other woman tells him to be gentle. She adds that she has to go out and tells Leo to be very gentle while she's gone.
Is Leo an adult?
I believe so. I mean, he might have the mind of a child.
He seems to either have the mind of a child or someone who's on some really like good drugs.
Could be either. It's the early 70s.
Yeah. We'll find out.
Rosie lays back on the couch and Leo reveals her breasts and begins to suck on her nipples. Leo compliments Rosie's breasts, saying they're nice. Rosie tells him that they're for him. Leo kisses his way down Rosie's body, sliding off the tights she's wearing. That's nice, he says. Leo begins to go down on Rosie. Rosie says, I'm so glad the Bat sent me here today. Leo says, me too. The Bat always sends me nice presents. He continues to lick Rosie's clit and fingers her as well. Leo says he has an idea, suggesting that she suck him now. Rosie says okay and gets on her knees to suck Leo's cock. We cut to the Bat on the streets. He sees a young woman bouncing a ball with a sucker in her mouth. The Bat approaches her, and we get some silent footage of him propositioning her. At first, she shakes her head at him, but when he shows her a $50 bill, she nods her head and smiles, following the Bat. We cut to the Bee, telling us that the Bat's a pervert. We cut back to Rosie blowing Leo, but now the other woman has joined them, and Leo is reaching behind himself to finger her. They switch off, and the other woman blows Leo while Rosie makes out with him.
There's a Bozo blow-up doll in the background.
With yeah.
The punching bag.
Yeah, that was, I mentioned that at the beginning where okay, it had panties on it.
Yes, and that's right.
Off. Yeah.
That's also another.
But yeah, it's
another
it's,
piece of evidence.
Yeah.
Building my case.
Leo says, another nice present from the Bat. The ladies switch and Rosie blows him more as the other woman gets behind him and seems to be kissing his ass. We cut to the Bat with the redhead at his place. The redhead is how the IAFD has her listed in here because she is unknown. She asks if she should take off her clothes, and the Bat says, of course. She undresses from her seemingly vinyl outfit.
Yeah, it's an odd outfit, to be sure.
She looks over to see what appears to be a Raggedy Ann doll going down on a Raggedy Ann doll.
Yes, with some primitive motions going on.
Yeah, it's like thrusting.
Yeah, it's thrusting through the power of special effects.
Yes. The redhead lays back on the bed and the Bat goes down on her. We cut to Rosie and the other woman who was with Leo. The two ladies are 69ing on the couch. We get some cunnilingus and fingering close-ups for a few minutes. We cut back to the Bat going down on the redhead, holding her hips up in the air and munching on her vagina. And now I want you to eat the Bat, he says. The Bat lays down on the bed and the redhead sucks his cock for a bit. We cut back to Leo, fucking Rosie doggy style. Oh, Leo, this is the best favorite position, Rosie says. The other woman is playing the support role, rubbing Leo's back. They switch to Leo fucking Rosie missionary. He bangs her for a bit and she moans harder and harder, seeming to orgasm. Leo tells Rosie he's tired of fucking and asks her to suck him more. Rosie sucks his cock as the other woman straddles his face and he eats her out from below. This continues for a few minutes, and Leo comes as Rosie strokes his cock. Suddenly, the bee runs in and yells, "Gotcha!" The bee says she knows that Rosie is one of the bat's girls and produces proof, the cape that Rosie was wearing. The bee asks where the bat is, and Rosie tells her that the bee's address is on a piece of paper in the hallway. The bee laughs. The end is near! We cut to the bat fucking the redhead doggy style as he has his thumb pressed against, but seemingly not into, her asshole.
He's just covering it up. He don't like seeing that.
He continues to bang her in this position for a bit before pounding her hard and pulling out, stroking out a load onto her ass. We then cut to a couple of racist caricatures of Native American men.
Perhaps the most racist I've ever seen. I haven't watched a lot of Westerns or anything, so there might be some worse ones, but these are true specimens.
The bee jumps into frame and yells, "Ha, gotcha!" She looks confused and she asks, "Is this 6169 North Indian Boulevard?" She doesn't get a response, but assumes it is. She asks where the bat is, and they grunt at her repeatedly.
Yeah, this is the only communication they make.
She's
primitive grunting.
Well, there is more.
Okay.
Because she says that she doesn't speak Indian, as she puts it, and decides to speak to them in bee.
Oh, that's true.
So she makes buzzing sounds at them, and they buzz back.
Okay, I forgot. They're a primitive people and can speak the language of the bee.
Yes. She finally determines that the last address in the list must be the bat's address. So the bee goes to leave, but the two Native American men grab her arm and won't let her go, showing her some dollar bills. She tells them, "What kind of bee do you think I am?" We cut to the bat with the redhead. He asks her for his $50 back. Upon receiving it, he says that he knows they're going to have a beautiful relationship.
Like that he just keeps that 50 in rotation.
Yeah.
He has never has to go to the ATM ever.
Yep.
Just takes it, gets it back, keeps it all in cash under his mattress. No banks for the bat.
No. There's a knock at the door, and there is another one of the bat's girls, Bonnie. The bat asks her for his money and retrieves it from her panties. Bonnie asks the bat if there's anything left for her, and he tells her no, but she can have some of this redhead. The bat decides that he's going to sit and watch this. So the bat asks the redhead if she's ever made love with a woman, and she says no. The bat tells her not to worry. Bonnie will be gentle with her. So the bat has Bonnie remove her cape before she leans in and starts to go down on the redhead. The bat continues to encourage the ladies as he watches on.
Looks like there's a framed picture of Rodin behind him.
I didn't catch that. That's awesome.
I can't quite make it out, but it does appear to be Toho pterodactyl shaped.
Okay.
So I'm going to call it a Rodin sighting. So, you know.
Sound the alarm.
Sound the alarm. Get to the lowest level of your dwelling.
Yes.
Here comes Rodin.
We cut back to the Native American guys with the bee. She's trying to leave and tells them she has to go, but the guys are insistent that she doesn't, undressing her. She, however, is smiling at this and not really fighting. She tells the camera, "These Indians aren't going to give up. I guess I'm just going to have to handle them quickly." The guys kneel side by side and the bee starts to blow both of them.
Both of them. Yes, indeed. I said that off mic. I was just making a little commentary to myself.
We cut back to the ladies going at it. Bonnie's still going down on the redhead as the bat laughs about how after midnight he'll be immortal. They shift into a 69 position after a bit as the bat laughs about the bee being a honey-dripping bitch. Meanwhile, the so-called Indians are having at the bee, one going down on her, the other getting his cock sucked by her.
Grunting all the while. If we haven't made it clear, our Indians are just white guys in wigs.
Yes.
Yes. They also have a big jug of what you would call fire water as
yeah.
Well. Yeah.
They switch positions with one guy fucking her doggy style as the bee sucks the other's cock. It's at this point that I did some research about the song playing in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Wooden Indian by John Denver.
Yes, they They really had to drive it home that these are Native Americans.
Yes. After a couple of minutes, they change positions, and one of the guys fucking the bee as she lays on her side, and the other guy caresses her chest. After the one guy pounds away for a couple of minutes, the guys switch, and the other guy fucks her a bit. The bee tells them they need to hurry up, so the second guy eventually pulls out and comes on the bee's pubes. We then cut to the bee, now dressed. She says she has less than an hour to stop the bat. The Native Americans offer her money to give to the bat, but she tells them that she's keeping it because she earned it. So we cut to the bee entering the bat's apartment. She says the revenge will be so sweet. She finds the bat asleep in a chair, naked but his cape. The bee yells that after 100 years she has him. The bat says, "The bee!" in shock, and tells her that she only has a few minutes left, and she'll never get his prick as he's covering it with his hands.
Yes.
The bee caresses his chest and arms as she talks about that night in Vienna, asking if he can remember. He stops guarding his cock with his hands, and the bee starts to suck his cock. The bat tells her not to do this. He doesn't want to turn to dust. But the bee gets to work. He tells her not to do this to him. Please! The bee makes the bat stand up and then has him lay on the bed where she continues to suck his cock. He continues to say things like, "Don't do that! I don't want to die!" The bee undresses and tells him he misused his powers she gave him before mounting him cowgirl and riding him hard. Yeah. The bee tells him, "When the clock strikes 12, you'll turn to..." And then we get a montage of the bat misusing his powers from earlier in the film.
Yes.
And we cut back to the bee, who is naked, straddling a pile of dust.
Yes, he's gone.
In the pile is a $50 bill, which the bee picks up and shows to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
The end. Wow.
And that was the waltz of the bat.
What a dangerous and deadly dance.
Yes.
Whew. Well,
it's time for the second.
The Raincoat Review.
It's time for the second Raincoat Review.
Our second The Raincoat Review.
Our second time we're in the box. This film's very amusing.
Yes.
It's a weird little film that I think fits this wacky style of humor very well.
Yeah.
They definitely play that up a lot with the fourth wall breaking and the silly costumes and racist caricatures.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun watching this one for sure. It's kind of like a more competent Bat Pussy, which we haven't covered on the show yet. But
no, we've got it in the back pocket.
We've got that one. It's in the chamber.
Yes.
Yeah, so don't fuck with us. Got a bat pussy pointed straight at your head.
Yeah.
But if you have seen that one, you know it's just kind of a directionless superhero parody.
Most of its humor just comes from the characters rambling and screaming, yelling at each other. Yeah. And just the weirdness of that. This at least has a direction.
Yeah, this has a direction and a plot. It's less delirious in that film because of that. But it's definitely more competently made than that film overall.
Yeah.
The bee has a foe and is dispatched.
Yes.
By the end of it. It's sort of like a little, because it's pretty short. Well, I don't know. It's like 1 hour and 10 minutes, but that's short enough. It kind of feels like a weird, like pornographic, like serial.
Okay.
You know, like those old, like real films, you know what I'm talking about, like,
oh,
the,
yeah,
like the
yeah,
old times, old timey films.
I was thinking breakfast food when you first said it, but I understand.
Yeah,
what you
serialized
mean
films.
Yes,
it kind of has the feel of that in a weird early 70s stoned out hippie way.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot of fun from that direction. I think if you like stuff like the 60s Batman or some of the other something weird films we've covered that kind of get far out there, this would be right up your alley.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely, the pacing is a little wonky at times, but we get there in the end, and I don't fault it too much for that.
Yeah.
I would say that their portrayal of Native Americans is very outdated.
Yes.
And a black mark upon this film. But otherwise, you're in for a fun time. I would give it about a 3. And, you know, now I know a John Denver song that's pretty interesting. It's Red Man, White Man, Get Off of My Land. Right? I was a red man, you were a white man. I just wrote those words down and then just had to look it up. So those are all the lyrics I have in my notes.
Yeah. I also enjoyed this. This was a fun watch. I mean, obviously the Native Americans in here were very tasteless, but you know, it's an early 70s porn film. We don't go into these expecting things to be handled with delicate hands.
That's true.
We're lucky that people weren't raped in this film. That's true. You could certainly have discussions about consent when he's using magical powers to make women do things, but you know, in the context of the grim 70s porn films we've seen, this is nothing.
No, it's very lighthearted compared to
climax of Blue Power.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to yawn there.
It's fun. It's goofy. The sex scenes aren't like great, but they're all right, and they don't really hang out for like way too long.
No, there's just a lot of different ones kind of piled together.
Yeah, but it was a nice little delight to watch. I would recommend it to people. I will also give it 3 stars.
Excellent. Well, that's I guess that's been All Night at the Bizarre Art Theater this year, and all of 5 weeks of Fright as well.
Well, our patrons get a bonus 6th week of Fright next week.
That is true.
Because we will be covering the Pornhub Halloween Contest 2023 next week.
Yes.
So for $5 a month, go to patreon.com/raincoatreport. Mm-hmm. And we will tell you all about the weird things that we found.
Yeah, we'll talk about the winners, the losers, and everything in between.
Yes. Mostly those in between.
Yeah.
But join us for that. It's always a fun time.
I've got something really in between for you.
I've got all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah. I think that's good.
All right. Well, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, you can find us on Raincoat Report on Instagram. I think Twitter is going to a subscription-only model, and I'm not paying that man.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Yeah, he says he wants to charge everyone $1 a year, and I'm like, I'm not paying $1 a year to use Twitter. So for now, Raincoat Report at Twitter, but maybe by the time this comes out, not, because I think he said he wanted to roll it out like tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's always just doing it like as quick as possible.
Yeah, we'll see.
He needs some fast cash, is I think what's going on.
If he puts any sort of paywall, even if it is $1 a year, it's going to immediately kill the user base.
Yeah, I'm not paying to promote my stupid podcast. I love doing it, but I'm not paying to promote it.
Yeah,
they can go to hell. I'll go to I don't know. I've probably got some Blue Sky codes. Maybe we'll pop up over there.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. It's invite only though, so I don't know how many of our perverts can get in.
Well, we'll have to see. Tell us where you want us to go, perverts.
Yeah, sound off in the comments below.
But anyhow,
and don't forget your raincoat.